Matthew 19, please. If I could have some men help me, that would be lovely. Matthew 19, start reading in verse 3. Isaac, Mr. Hall, thank you. Matthew 19 and verse 3. All the way down to verse 12. This is the section that we skipped a couple weeks back intentionally. Thought I would deal with some of it on a Sunday night. Everybody, Matthew 19, verse 3, let's stand. According to the hatred I received tonight, because the subject we're going to read about is, in our circles, one of the most hate-filled subjects. By the way, are you awake out there or are you already asleep? Did you hear what I said? It's one of the most hate-filled subjects. The best way, by the way, I have learned the best way to deal with this is to skip it. So you just skip chapters of the Bible. It's not important. And according to the blowback I get tonight, I might skip it. So let me tell you what I have ready. I have an introduction tonight on the subject at hand. The Pharisees trying to trap Jesus. My guess is, in this room, none of you, maybe Joseph, has ever experienced this, and maybe Dada. Most of you have never experienced this. And none of us, including me, have ever experienced this at the level Jesus did. Someone trying to trap you in what you're teaching. It can happen in small ways, but it doesn't usually mean danger. So I have this introduction tonight. I also have probably 2 to 3 weeks on the divorce, marriage, all that mess. And I have 2 complete Sunday nights just on being single. You say, why? In the text. We're going to read the whole text. We're only going to deal with verse 3 mainly tonight. The Pharisees also came unto him doing what? Tempting. That is exactly a correct translation, but it can miss totally the point. It's much more serious than tempting. It's not like he was being tempted to smoke a cigarette. But we'll get to that. Saying unto him. And then they ask him, and I'm assuming if you read English, you know this is what's called a ridiculous question. Is it lawful for a man to put away or divorce his wife for every cause? Is that a ridiculous question? Well, that's part of the trap. Verse 4. And he answered and said unto them, and by the way, he went right after it. Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning, or created them is the Greek word, at the beginning, here's created, made or created them, male and female. And said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and they twain, or the two, shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more twain or two, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Verse 7. By the way, and in verse 7, if you're not listening to the introduction, you're still not hearing. They're still trying to trap Jesus. Is this a fair question? Well, it would require you to know the Old Testament. Read what it says. They say unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? Is that a fair question? If you don't know, you miss the whole point of the whole text, because the whole text is trying to trap Jesus. Can I give it away? There were no commands any place in the Bible to divorce. The command is if you get divorced, you give your wife legal protection. So they doubled up on the commands to make it look like, well, then why did Moses command men to divorce their wives? He didn't. That's the trap. Unfortunately, when we read this, most of us kind of stumble and bumble, including I got this many books in my office, and sometimes I wonder if they've ever read these texts, because we get caught up in our own drama. Well, we'll continue. Verse 8. He said unto them, "Well, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you or allowed you to put away your wives." See, he didn't say commanded. He said allowed or suffered, right? He changes immediately the lies they're telling. But from the beginning, it was not so. Our first issue on divorce and remarriage will be that basic premise. We always got to go back to the beginning. Verse 9, "And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except," there is an exception, "it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." His disciples say unto him, "If the case of the man be so with his wife, it is not good to marry." Or other translations will say it this way, same statement, it's better not to marry. Verse 11, "He said unto them," all men, or men's in italics, all people cannot receive this saying. They just can't make room for that saying in their life. I would tell you that most people cannot make room in their life for being single. You say, why? Have you read what we have already read? God in the beginning made them for the purpose on the norm to be married. So we don't play the Roman Catholic game of making singleness somehow special. But there is a place. All people, all, cannot receive this saying, save, or but they to whom it is. Verse 12 is not deep, and I'm not going to explain it tonight. For there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men, and there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of God's sake. And then you conclude this whole section on the issue of singleness. He or she that is able to receive it. A word that means to make room. It's the word horizons. If you're able to receive it, he says, let him receive it. We'll talk about singleness for this reason. We have single people in this room. Some churches do everything they can to get every single person married off as early as they possibly can. Is that a biblical teaching? You see, you have to come to the whole Bible. Tonight, we're just going to introduce on the issue of trapping Jesus. Again, no criticism of you. I have experienced this, but never at the level Jesus did, because he was experiencing a trap that was, are you ready? Dangerous. Life dangerous. Not you'll be made fun of. Dada, I have been trapped before where you're doing this. Somebody asks you a question and you're like, you're just embarrassed. No one's ever trapped me in a way that I could lose my life. That's what was going on here. Let's pray together. We'll get started. Father, I ask your blessings on this day. May this be a profitable time in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. We'll begin. And I'll tell you a short story in a moment about being trapped in a similar thing. Simply stated, friend, the Jewish leadership wanted Jesus gone. Does everybody recognize that? By this time, they just want him gone. But the question is, how to get it done? Killing him was not legal. Friends, Jewish people, after the Romans took over in 63 BC, did not have the legal right to execute anybody. They executed people, but it was never legal, and they could get in serious trouble, lose their jobs, their positions. So how do I get rid of this Jesus? Well, that was the question. I say in your notes, tempting him, perazzo, became their modus operandi, their tried and true methodology, what they used to try to trap Jesus. In your notes, tempting fundamentally means to try someone, to test them, or to tempt them. And by extension, especially in Jesus' case, to trick him and ultimately trap him in his words. So I think it doesn't mean tempting like tempting to drink a beer. He's doing something where you get caught up in your words. So everyone look at me. It's happened when I've taught in several places. I only have time for one. My favorite. I'm teaching something. I don't even know what it was, but it had nothing to do with the question. You know, you're teaching on I think I was teaching on hermeneutics, how to read the Bible. At the end of an hour or two, guy raises his hand, stands up, and he asks the question that he and a bunch of his buddies got together to trick me on. Here was the question. Pastor Warren, was Jesus a Baptist? This is my first reaction. What? And then I remember telling him, I honestly, and I would still give the same answer, I think Jesus was Jewish. A Baptist is someone, after the Bible was put together, that comes to the Bible, and you have these three issues, in case you want to know what makes you a Baptist. You are Trinitarian Orthodox. You believe in a triune God. Secondly, you are evangelical and evangelistic. You believe in the gospel of the grace of God, and you teach, preach, and promote it. And thirdly, you hold to what's called Baptist distinctives. Somehow, Jesus was a Baptist because John the Baptist... You say, is that the only time you've been trapped? Oh, no. I spent one morning, look at me in the eyes. There's over 100 references to the word ecclesia. Church, much of the time. And our church, in the doctrinal statement, says we believe in the local church, that's the primary use, and we believe in a universal church. Where do we get that from? The sky, right? I went through every reference, and you run into references that no longer can you say those references mean a local church only. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved and gave himself. I'm sorry, he didn't give himself for any one local church. He didn't give himself for this local church or even this local church throughout its history. He gave himself for all of those and more, but in this sense, from the rapture, from the beginning of the church to the rapture, he gave himself for the church. I went through every verse, over 100, to have the same guy, by the way. He stands up and says, so you believe in the universal church? Yes. Where does the universal church take communion? Huh? The universal church is simply all of God's people. From the beginning of the Pentecost. Now, there's people in the Old Testament, but I don't think they're part of the church. I'm a dispensationalist. The church to the rapture, it's all of us. We don't all take communion at one time and at one place. Do you understand a trap, yes or no? Now, the difference is nobody killed me. That's the difference. Now, are you ready to look at Jesus trying to trap him? It's a little different than your feelings and emotions and mine. It's serious business. All right, in your notes. Perazzo, the word to tempt, is only found in the passages in your notes in the Gospel of Matthew. It is found when Jesus was led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. Hupo doesn't mean of, it means by. That is a certain kind of temptation, but probably not to smoke or drink. Matthew, though those are wrong, it's not what it's about. Matthew 16:1, now we see the modus operandi, the normal techniques of trying to trap Jesus. The Pharisees also with the Sadducees came and tempting desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. So they're trying to trap him. 19 verse 3, the Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put his wife for every cause? Which anybody knows the answer to that is no. 22:18. But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, why tempt ye me, you hypocrites? 22:35. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him, saying. So above that, I simply say this. I want to repeat. The word tempting, perazzo, to tempt, means to try, tempt, or test or tempt. By extension, to trick, and then by further extension, to trap. I don't believe Jesus was being tempted in our normal way. They were trying to trap him in words. And there are four traps that he had to avoid. And everyone to look at me. And the first one, I want to ask you a question. Are you allowed to criticize the President of the United States? Answer the question. Of course. Might not make you popular where you work, but you can criticize Trump, you can criticize Biden, you can criticize the next guy. How about Putin? My answer is good luck. Do you understand there's a difference? Do you understand the death penalties in North Korea by even not worshiping the idiot in charge? These are serious matters. The first trap is the most dangerous of all in the sense of life and death in your notes. So what exactly were they after? What traps were they setting to trap or catch Jesus? Number one, there was first of all a political trap. I'm assuming everybody would know this. I say this political trap was between Jesus and Herod Antipas plus. Why plus? Everyone look at me. Because he isn't the only person in that world with power that had been divorced. Let's not be stupid. But if you've never read about the Caesars, you know nothing about Tiberius, you can just believe anything you want to believe. Friends, divorce was an issue then as it is now. But the first issue was Herod Antipas. Say, well, how so? I should bring two guys up here. Cliff, can I bring you and Dada up here? Who wants to be Herod Antipas? Bring your stuff with you because I'll just keep you up here. Who wants to be Herod Antipas? Who wants to be Jesus? Let's take a vote. Who's Jesus? Everybody voted against you. Just put your stuff down for a moment. I have to illustrate only because of this reason. Come on over closer, gentlemen. This was no innocent, sincere question wanting to understand the Bible. They wanted to take Jesus and let him have a little conversation with Herod. How many of you remember the last person that had a conversation with Herod about divorce? And how did that work out? Herod, I never knew you looked like this. Thank you. You guys just have a seat. We'll come back. So it was a political trap in your notes. Most of us deal with personal traps. I agree. No, not belittling you. I want you to see what was going on with Jesus. Fear, anxiety, money, marriage, bitterness, any number of things. Few of us live in the realms of power, money, and politics. Jesus, being a leader and the Messiah, by default was in that position. Matthew 14. At that time, Herod, the tetrarch, which meant he controlled a quarter of the old area that Herod the Great controlled, he heard of the fame of Jesus and said unto his servants, isn't this a weird statement? This is John the Baptist. He is risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him. For Herod, why? He had laid hold on John, bound him, put him in prison. Why? For Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife. Everyone look at me. Did you notice anything in this? This is Herod Antipas, yes or no? What is the woman he's interested in's name? This is one of the creepiest stories. I just read a historian on the Herods from the first Herod the Great's father all the way to the bitter end. And by the way, one of them, I forget which one, either Drusilla or Bernice ended up dying in an event you know about. One of the two of the great-grandchildren died at Mount Vesuvius with her child. These people were all through politics. But Herodias and Herod, isn't that similar? Because I think she was related to him in other ways too. So he goes, by the way, don't you do this with your brother? You go to your brother's house, you like his wife, you take his wife. But he was already married. And he was married politically to a Nabatean, or I don't know how to say the word very well, king's daughter.
So he kicked her to the curb, which caused a war. He lost the war. The Romans saved his life. And here's John the Baptist saying, Herod, it's not good. This is not right. Well, I think you know the story, don't you? Verse 4, for John said unto him, it is not lawful for thee to have her. And when he would have put him to death, he feared the multitude because they counted him as a prophet. Well, a little bit later, through dancing and other stuff, he sent and beheaded John in prison. So friend, never read this passage. Look at me. Never read this passage as if you're doing religion or you're just expounding on your deep insight into divorce and remarriage. This was life and death, and it was meant to be. It was meant to get him in conflict with him. And I have a question. Was Herod involved in Jesus' crucifixion? I can't hear you. This was all politics. Sadly, my voice is not doing well, so I'm going to skip all the verses. I'm going to assume you can read. And I'm going to assume you want to read, because these are the texts that talk about, in Luke, Herod joining in the crucifixion and Herod and Pontius Pilate becoming friends. Acts chapter 4 mentions Herod again. We read it this morning. Under that, I say this, important footnote to marriage in the Greco-Roman world. Rome was a mess when it came to marriage. They had lots of laws that seemed to not matter at all. Augustus, which was dead by this time, had passed morality laws that he never obeyed in the least. There seemed to be a great disjunction between their laws and their practices. So it's just important. It wasn't just Herod Antipas, it was anybody. And we're in mixed company, and we have children here. Look at me, please. I'm not going to mention one word. Tiberius, on the very best day, was a pervert. You can find, if you're interested, here it is. The 12 Caesars, Suetonius, on Tiberius, on the island, you might say Capri or Capri. If you think... And I've read Christians trying to say, oh, they didn't have divorce. You're like, what? I think we have no clue. Terrible situation. So who knows who else they were trying to trap Jesus between? I say in your notes, this is especially true among the upper class, those with power. The lower class, information is lacking. See, we don't know much about the common person. In the ancient world, most everything we know comes from the extreme powerful people. Number two, there's another trap. Everybody look up here. Gentlemen, may I? Now we're coming to people that are serious about Christianity. The first trap was just politics. But there's a harder trap here. And I want to say this. I've got two books on my desk. You can read both of them if you want to get your mind confused. Both of them take the Pharisees' side. They were trying to trap Jesus in another way. Here's Jesus. Look at me. And here's Moses. Look me in the eyes. Jesus, could he say Moses was wrong? Well, friend, if you can say Moses is wrong, Moses was God's spokesman, which means God was wrong. And they're trying to trap Jesus in between Moses and Jesus. And for the common man, that was very important. Now, not for the Pharisees. They're trying to trap him politically, but the religious trap. So, well, let's go ahead. Have a seat, gentlemen. Are you all with me? Really not hard. Verse 7, we've already said that. They, the Pharisees, said unto him, Jesus, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? And your first statement should be, he never commanded. You're twisting Moses. You're perverting Moses. Next page, please. So what did Moses do? We'll talk about this in future weeks in a bigger way. By the way, the Bible really, when you talk about marriage, and by the way, I prefer to talk about marriage and health as to divorce. I'm not interested in divorce. But excuse me, for all of you that are against divorce in all cases, I much prefer divorce than murder, which we seem to have moved to in this country. Actually, murder suicides. Shouldn't there be a better solution? I can be against divorce and still think. And folks, it happens. Tom, how much does it happen? Just constantly. Somebody kills. How do you kill your own kids? Not promoting divorce. Deuteronomy. This is, by the way, God originally ordained one man, one woman. We know that. It says, when a man had taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he hath found, and the key of this whole thing was, what did Moses or the Lord mean by that, those two words, some uncleanness in her? So he says, then let him write her a bill of divorcement, give it to her hand, and send her out of his house. But the bill of divorcement was the command, not the divorce. Goes on to say, when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorcement and giveth to it in her hand and sendeth her out of his house, or if the latter husband die, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. So this was never to be a game, back and forth stuff, which is just totally gross. I asked the question in your notes, were the questions of the Pharisees legitimate? And the answer is, one was, one wasn't. In the divorce process, the wife was to receive a formal legal document, saying that she was permitted to be remarried and she was free. But there was no command to get divorced, ever, in your notes. For the common person, this was the greatest trap. So if I could take, look up here, if I could take, look up here, the Messiah and get him opposing Moses, he's not the Messiah. Do you understand? How could you oppose what God has said? That's the trap. They wanted to trap him in that. So, if the Pharisees could trap Jesus in between Moses, would Jesus be the Messiah? That's the question. So, in your notes, I'm just going to state this. You don't have to like it, dislike it, agree with it. It's just factual stuff. Moses allowed an exception. The King James uses some uncleanness, and that's pretty close to what it means. He goes on to say, so I asked the question, did Jesus correct the exception? Let me ask it another way. Could Jesus correct Moses, which was God's author? You got a real problem if Jesus can correct Moses. You see, Jesus then ceases to be the Messiah because he's going contrary to the very person talking about the Messiah. Next, could Jesus eliminate the exception? Well, there are a lot of people that think so. Next, did Jesus contradict the exception? Those are the three questions you need to wrestle with. But this is the trap of the common man. They thought, man, so they try to get him between Herod and Jesus and then between Moses. And the common man didn't care about Herod, but they cared about Moses. Well, in your notes, it says very clearly, this issue, because he hath found some uncleanness. Matthew 19:9 gives an exception. It says, except it be for fornication. I'm going to give away my belief. You do not have to agree with me, but you better not. Look at me. You are not allowed to disagree with God. And I have problems with people that just simply say it's like Moses was wrong. Or what Moses said wasn't true. There was an exception. This is what I think Jesus did. I say in your notes, or did Jesus clarify the exception? Did he narrow the exception down to what God originally intended, the only good reason for being divorced and remarried? That's what I think. So some uncleanness means fornication. And that's the reason he says in Matthew 5, 31 and 32, and in Matthew 19, except it be for fornication. He's simply saying that's what I meant originally by some uncleanness. And even that doesn't explain everything. We'll talk more about that in future weeks. So that's what some uncleanness means. I say in your notes, there was never a command for divorce. The only exception was clarified, and I would say limited. I think that's all Jesus did. All right, number three. Everybody's with me, more or less. You say, this is too much thinking on a Sunday night. Then you do it. By the way, you never have to do it in some countries. I'll talk about it in the future weeks. I don't know if it's still true. By the way, I better step back. I don't know if this is all true because countries have changed more in the last 30 years than they have in the last 500. But all Roman Catholic countries used to not have divorce. Look at me, please. So it was common, and I'll talk about this in future weeks. Meeting a missionary, I believe, to Argentina, and he said, there are no divorced people in my church that have ever... And I'm like, what? None? Zero? He said, no. Now, that doesn't mean they were still with their wife or spouse. They just moved on three or four different levels. Because if you can't get divorced, who cares? You just... Susie goes with Billy, and then they split up, and Susie goes with Charlie, And I'm like, what? So, the next one will not impress anybody except people that have had this. Yeah, I will be able to impress you a little bit, I think. I call it a theological trap. The third one is a theological trap between Jesus and the various schools of thought or theology. You see, the Pharisees didn't bring up an issue that people hadn't talked about before. Now, friends, I have it in the notes, but look at me. It's not hard. I'll give you the specifics in a moment. In Jesus' day, there were lots of people that taught the Bible. One school of thought was pretty restrictive. It said the only reason you can get divorced and remarriage is some sort of ongoing immorality that breaks a marriage bond, and then you can get divorced and remarriage. There was actually... You always hear two, but there was probably as three or four or five. There was another group that says there's lots of reasons you can get divorced and remarried. And then there were some groups that said, you don't like the way she cooks your toast anymore. She's toast. Did you get the joke? Yeah. Some of you are like, she's out of here. So there was, do you understand there's schools of thought? All right, I hope you're awake. Because I like this. In your notes, this is a Pastor Warrenism tonight. This was a way of pigeonholing Jesus. If you do not know what that means, here is a Ralph Warrenism, pigeonholing, pinning you down to, your, look at me, you're one of them. You're a conservative. You're a Republican. Now, sorry, Clayton, I'm a white nationalist. I never even heard that term to a couple years ago. I'm a what? I think I'm an American, and I guess I'm white. I'm pretty light. I get roasted quickly. I don't know. Do you all understand what that's pigeon? You're one of those, so I don't have to listen to you. Here's Pastor Warren's statement, and I think there's nothing better you will ever hear. It will help you capture this. It will help you with politics. Got it? I call it label and dismiss. You're one of those dismissed. You could write a 500-page book and nobody read the book because you're one of those dismissed. They were trying to pigeonhole Jesus into which group so then they could dismiss him. Now do you understand pigeonholing? Stick him in a group, dismissed. You're one of those. So here's some of them. Oh, you're a fundy. By the way, if you're a fundamentalist, you know what that means. No fun, too much damn, not much mental. Joseph, you've heard that. So what are they saying? Well, you're a fundamentalist. You don't have any brains. You don't believe in fun, and you don't, you know, too much damn. Therefore, what? Dismissed. Folks, those guys that asked me, is Jesus a Baptist? You know what they were trying to do? Label me, dismiss me. You could talk for 100 hours. You could read every verse in the Bible. Label, dismiss. I have a page of these things. You're a Baptist. What do you think? You're born a Baptist with a little thing over your head? Baptist is a series of, hold it, it's a series of beliefs that I came to. They're not something that I bought at a store. Now, I'm not defending any of these. You're a MAGA. You're a white nationalist. You're an election denier. You're a charismatic. So what would you have to say to me? You don't know anything. Or you're white. Here's my favorite. This is my absolute favorite. You are white male cisgender. The first time I was called a cisgender, I honestly had no idea what they were talking about. I'm a what? I guess I'm a male. I guess I'm white. Do you understand? So a big piece of this, not for the normal person. The normal person, it was Moses and Jesus. Politics, Jesus and Herod, and the rest of the politicians. But for a group, they wanted to get, oh, you're one of them. So it means you don't have, by the way, in certain circles, if I said I was dispensationalist, from that point on, I would not be spoken to or looked at. I know this. You're just one of those. You say, but I didn't come to this position, just somebody handed me a card I put in my pocket. They don't care. Label, dismiss. Label and dismiss. That's the trick. I say in your notes, this is not as dangerous, but quite effective. You're one of them, so I don't need to listen to you. Under the verses, Deuteronomy 24:1, there were two major schools, but it appears there were other schools, and then there were, we don't know what the common man believed. Shammai school thought that some uncleanness was much what Jesus believed, sexual unfaithfulness of some variety. And by the way, not even talking about one time, probably talking about, you know, otherwise the guy left and has a woman or vice versa, you know, something that breaks the marriage. Hillel school was simply some uncleanness was divorce for much more trivial reasons. And as I say in your notes, others had even a more lenient view. The old joke is one of them said, you know, if you burn the toast, so to speak, you're out of here. Now, I want to say this to you. Let me ask a question, because we got young people here. I'm looking around this room. There's only historically, there's only a handful of us who would know. Who, do me, do this favor, do this, hand, who introduced no-fault divorce to the United States as a politician? Go ahead, Joseph. Ronald Reagan, one of our conservative presidents. How do you like that? You know what? I would think the common person was a no-fault divorce person. Makes no difference. Just get divorced, remarried, divorced, remarried, divorced, remarried. Who cares? All right. Number four. Yes, Pam, I don't have time to deal with that right now, but exactly. If you read, by the way, the book, I assume it's still on the market. She's long dead. She was a genius woman, a true liberal, but very smart and honest liberal. Tom, I think you read the book, Judy Wallerstein's book, Divorce 25 Years Later. People were all for divorce for any cause because they thought it would protect women. So Judy Wallerstein was a PhD in research and produced a bunch of them. I have the books upstairs. And what they found was what we thought was good did not turn out so good, which is what we have in America, a mess. All right, number four is a practical trap. This to me is simply this. This is the trap between Jesus and the common man. His disciples, when they hear they can't get out of their marriage very easily, basically say, well, you know what? It'd probably be better not to marry. I say in your notes, divorce and remarriage is a minefield. People have opinions, yes or no? Very strong opinions. I would say that people will have stronger opinions about this than the Trinity, the deity of Christ, the millennium, and almost anything. Then I'm being cynical. Shouldn't we all just have the Bible's opinion? I ask you a question. Well, that sounds real simple, but we don't. We have lots of opinions. So let me tell you a story. Sunday morning, 20 years ago, maybe, lady comes up to me and says, these are almost exact words. Don't know the whole story, but the gist. Said my niece married a guy. She married a guy, and these are her, I think, exact words. She has outgrown him. So, Judy, you have no idea, because that's not a problem you're ever going to have. And I'm not being funny. He's not perfect. We've already voted him to be Herod, so we already know he's not good. But your husband was already a college grad, so, you know, moving places. She married a guy that was cool, funny, liked to drink, liked to watch sports, liked to eat, liked to sit in front of the television. She loved him. And she outgrew him. Well, of course, because 15 years later, guess what he's doing? The exact same thing. She had outgrown him. So here's a lady, pretty close to where Rhonda is seated now, said to me, can she get divorced? And it's like, what do you want me to say? Now, what you don't know is they stopped coming here. But you didn't know, well, you wouldn't know them, but you didn't know why they would stop. She didn't like my answer. Divorce and remarriage makes people furious. Let me tell you the worst story I could ever tell you. I knew a pastor. He was called to go to another church to be the pastor. It was a weird situation. He went there. They loved him. He preached for them. He taught, etc. They wanted him. He came there again. They voted on him. But for some reason, they voted on him, but they said, we also want to have like a final formal vote. So he told his church where he was from, I'm moving from here to that city. He goes there on the following Sunday to the church that's, and he preaches, teaches, normal stuff. At the end of the service, they have food, fellowship, and they ask questions. And somebody asked him about, and he did not have that person's opinion. And the pastor had neither job. Do you understand what I just said? Because he didn't agree with my friend. When Jesus was being trapped, there were four things going on. The biggest thing is the common person. The common person, they're thinking, I want to be able to get out of my marriage. Then, what about Moses? And then, where do I put you? What category? Are you ready, PDD? How do I pigeon? What does a pigeon live in? How do I stick you in your box so I can label and dismiss you? And maybe you'll say something and Herod will get rid of you and that would be good for us. Now you understand the conversation that we will have. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time together in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's stand, please.